revenue and spending.
Professor Nesson, Speaker Denise.
Hi, Professor. How are you?
How do you do,
sir? Pleasure to see you.
Pleasure to see you.
Say hello to Aaron Michaelitz.
Hello, Aaron. So let me be brief and get right to the point. I understand I just got a few minutes. It's okay. Well, first regards from Joe Finder. It's through Joe that I made the connection.
My wife, he's on Penn New England, right?
I don't know. Well, Joe's a novelist, and he met you at some dinner, and he somehow...
Penn New England.
That's what, yes, yes, exactly right.
Charitable
exactly
thing
right.
For inner-city kids for literature. All the authors come for a fundraiser.
Exactly.
And he usually MCs at the event, I think.
Really?
He's very entertaining guy.
All right, so I'm a professor at Harvard Law School. My interest in this is that my mission in life at this point is open online education. It's the open access movement at Harvard, which is now really blossoming in a wonderful way.
I read in the paper about you using gaming
yes, exactly.
And poker or something as a tool to educate your students.
Exactly.
And the picture was in the paper too, right? I
remember. Yes, exactly.
I remember that. How's that?
That's similar to the movie I just saw?
Huh?
Is that similar to the movie I just saw, 21?
21,
about
no,
the
no,
MIT
no, no,
students.
No. This is Harvard.
Yeah, right. Well, the kid was trying to get into Harvard business.
Oh, I didn't see the movie. Did you see the
movie? Yeah, I saw it on Wednesday.
I didn't see that.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I actually have a movie I want to show you, but just let me explain it for a second. I really got started on this when the governor's casino bill was introduced, and I down there buried in it was this provision that would make playing poker online a...
Yeah, we'll put that in.
I've been after that exact question, and I asked DeVal that question at the hearing. DeVal was a student of mine when he was at the law school.
Oh, yeah.
So I asked him, DeVal, how'd this get in there? And he said that Martha Coakley's office put it in. And I've now gotten in touch with her, and I'm hoping to speak with her about it. The language that DeVal used was to clarify the law. Now, in the lingo of the trade, that's the Department of Justice talking. It's not the State Attorney General. So I think that Martha Coakley will say that the word came from Washington. And when the track bill went in after the casino bill went down, the same provision's right in there again. And it's not,
really?
And I've checked with Suffolk, it doesn't come from them. So.
Slots at the racetrack?
Yeah.
Has the same provision?
Yeah, exactly, word for word.
Criminalizing it?
Yeah.
How did that get in?
Yeah, exactly. Same way it got in this other one. It's like, well, the whole way in which the federal government goes about prosecuting gambling and its policy to it is just really inexplicable to me. It's like, incredibly strange. But,
Is there an act that prohibits
no.
gaming?
No. What there is, they passed a year ago in October the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act, the closest they could come to making online wagering a crime was to make it a crime for the financial institutions which process the bets for gambling companies, that became a crime. But they've never been able to get through. They've tried. They started trying in 1998. Somebody started trying in 1998 to actually criminalize online poker, and the Congress has always refused to do it. Online gaming. I shouldn't say poker. Poker is my particular concern.
Yeah.
But.
And wouldn't this be a benefit for the casinos if you could not gamble online and therefore you have to go to the casino?
That was exactly my first thought. And in fact, at the first hearing, the one that Flynn did, I asked Adelston whether he had put the provision in. He said no, he'd never heard of it. I then subsequently wrote him a letter. He wrote me back a letter on letterhead saying, no, we want nothing to do with this. We'll help you get it out if you can. I did the same thing with Gary Loveman at Harris. It's not the casino industry. The casino industry's interest. They've never been against online. Nevada was the first state to criminalize online.
Yeah.
But they did it, you can see it in the statute, as purely a step to set up a regulatory structure. They wanted to be the mecca of online gambling. Why not? It's a $15 billion global business. But the Department of Justice didn't let him do it. And one of the most interesting things is this Internet Enforcement Act that they passed a year ago, October. Although, you know, Barney Frank and everybody's up in arms about it, one of the things it makes perfectly clear is that it's now within state jurisdiction to legalize online gambling. California.
State jurisdiction?
It makes it completely clear. That is, the feds step above the state law. They enforce the state law.
Yeah.
But they actually put language in there. It's just completely clear now. So California now has a bill in to establish a commission to spend a year to tell the state that it's okay to do intrastate online gambling. But in terms of opportunity and really what, I mean, I'd love to catch your interest at like three different levels, but at this level, it's that there is a $3 billion business in online poker that is waiting for the first state to set up a structure that permits it, that regulates it, that does it. And from my point of view, well, just to tell the story the way I get it, DeVal puts in his three casinos and criminalizes online poker. You basically say, your numbers are bullshit.
Right.
And you just show down. You beat him cold. But he's yelling, all right, show me your alternative. What do you got that's better? Maybe my numbers are full of hot air. Maybe it isn't 30,000 jobs. Maybe it's 10,000 jobs. So what do you got? And so there's an opportunity to come forward with something that's like the opposite of Duval. Instead of it being brick-and-mortar casinos and criminalizing Internet, go just the other way around. Go for a game of skill on the Internet. And
how do we get revenue back?
Well, poker pays for itself. People play poker. It's not a casino game. You're not playing against the house. It's not a slot. It's not addictive in anything like the same way as the slots. It's just it's a game of skill, truly. You play on a rake. So when you play, the house takes some money out of each pot. That's why the casinos don't really like poker, because it's just a real estate game for them. It's just running tables. It's
right.
It's not right. So
it's like paying rent at a table.
Paying rent. So we could set up, we can set up a structure which remits to the state without any necessary bureaucracy in between whatever revenue the state's got coming from the play of any Massachusetts residents within that environment.
Yeah.
That's just for starters.
But how do you figure that out? How do you figure out which ones are in Massachusetts and who pays?
Well, when you play online, you play from an IP address.
Yeah.
Plus, when you're playing for money, it's completely appropriate. And I'll take a step further. When I speak, there's two paradigms that you're thinking about. One is the existing poker world, which is part of gambling. But if you come from my paradigm, poker is the latest step in a stage of online learning, starting with strategic games, tic-tac-toe, and moving up through tic-tac-toe, lines and dots, connect four, checkers, chess, poker. So it's at the end of a long educational line. And in its way, it's the most sophisticated games. You look at it in that paradigm, I want to know exactly who my students are. So we need a totally accurate registration process keyed to residence. We know who the players are. It's also perfectly possible, just to show you how interesting I think this is from an educational point of view. It's even possible that people only earn money in this environment, that you don't put money into it. You only take money out of it. Now, that sounds strange, but I'll just give you the example of the business model that we're building from. A startup company less than 3 years ago in Gibraltar named PokerStrategy.com offers totally free poker education online. It gives tests to the people that it's schooled. And the people who do well on the test, they stake to $50 at Party Gaming, which is a poker-playing company. Those people who are good, it's now Poker Strategy has now invested in their best students. And those students now go on and play at Party Gaming, and actually many have careers going on. And ever after, Poker Strategy gets a piece of the rake of those people's play. So it's like you literally are investing in the skill of your students. Now just go up a level and imagine Massachusetts investing in the skill of its students. Yeah, we could do that.
So what did Massachusetts get out of that?
Well, here's what I can see Massachusetts getting out of it. First of all, Massachusetts does what Nevada wanted to do in 2002. As soon as we have a proven, workable regulatory structure that's got every modern whatever feature that anybody would want in it, as far as answering to security concerns and answering to moral concerns, the whole Megillah, assuming you've got that, you have the nucleus of a global business, which is in the mega billions. Dave Satz sat at the hearing next to me. He's the lobbyist for Harris. And I asked him, how big is the U.S. poker business potentially if it opened up? And he said $3 billion. He actually called back to Harris and got their number, $3 billion. And it's growing. And that's if you just think of it as poker. If you think of it as school, so it's like, what are we doing? We're actually trying. Here's the real strategy. Kids love games. Kids growing up in a digital world love these digital games. Love them. Right. The potential of being able to connect with the kids who are playing the games so that the games just continue and lead through to higher education is right there. Absolutely right there. And so that's it. That's what we're up to. And if you can build that structure with playing poker at the end of it in a way that actually pays for it, so that it's got its own positive business plan, it's not dependent on grant, it's not dependent on tax. In fact, it's throwing off revenue.
And is this a golden career of playing poker more, or is it just any career?
Well, it's only poker.
Okay.
It's only their poker. If they,
but the skills you learn in poker will help you in any other career?
You're just so right on. Now, let me just tell you.
Yes.
I'm doing a workshop at Harvard as part of the 10th anniversary celebration of the Berkman Center, which is the center, the Internet and Society Center, that's focused on exactly the question you just asked. I was at a big thing at a conference at Google, where this may all sound like a foreign language to you, so just get the music, all right? Joey Ito, who is like Mr. Internet, he's got the biggest Rolodex in the Internet. He is a level 70 master of World of Warcraft, which is the most popular of the kids' games, the multiplayer, you know, millions of people in the World of Warcraft. He is at this dinner saying how to become a level 70 leader means that you've acquired skills which are of a comparable value in employment situations. Jamie Gorelick, who sits on the board of the MacArthur Foundation, which has invested huge money in the last 2 years in just trying to understand what's going on in the digital world of kids and education, says to him, do you think you could do a research study, that we could do a research study, which would document to a level of academic satisfaction correlation between the set of game skills, and not just limited to World of Warcraft, game skills, and set of employable skills? And that's what the conversation and a large part of the conference and a large part of this workshop now becomes about. Because once, if you can do that, that means that you can make a measure of critical, strategic thinking skills that's totally independent of the public school system, that actually has currency in a world of employers. They don't teach those skills. I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why in the logic of games, tic-tac-toe, right up the line, through checkers and chess, they are all games of complete, certain information.
Right.
You see everything, you see the board just the way the other guy sees the board.
Then you interpret it differently.
All right. Now you move to poker. That's a game of uncertain, incomplete information.
Right.
That's comes much closer to life. I mean, that's
right.
When you make a move in a war situation, you've got incomplete information about the other side, and you're not certain about the information you've got.
Poker, right? When someone calls in poker when they shouldn't, they make a mistake, right? But if they make a call and they get the inside straight, right? Then they think they can do it all the time, then that gives you a false sense of the ability to make that choice again, right?
That's for sure.
How am I doing so far?
Do you play poker?
A little bit. I used to play. I haven't played in a long time, but I was pretty good at it.
But each hand or whatever is an independent variable into itself.
However, it's not. Because...
Well, you know how...
I said this to anybody, but my father was an unbelievable poker player.
Really?
He was like one of the best that was ever around. My kid was a lot of gamblers. He was a tremendous poker player. He was skilled, very skilled. And he won almost all the time. Everybody wanted him in the game because he was that great. But he was also good at, which I think is... not only are the statistical decisions that you have to make, but he was very good at playing for a long time with other people so that he would know his ability to beat them.
Right.
And he would actually, at the beginning of his games, set up the circumstances by which he could win money later on. How am I doing?
You're doing great.
That sounds familiar to you?
Yeah.
Huh? So you're in business and you have to really know when somebody is telling you things that they're not telling you really from what they're saying, but from what they've done in their experience, that you know what they are and what they've done. Right?
Each hand or each
playing, right, will give you indications as to where they are in the hand.
Right.
And the person that gave you the least amount of indicators was the one that was always at the best chance of winning because you never know what they had. And that's how my father won. Walk into a game, play for 2 days. Had his tie and shirt on. When he walked up 2 days later, he had his tie and shirt on.
We play at my house.
Huh?
And my friends, we play at my house once in a while.
Yeah.
But and everyone knows each
other's... Listen to that, Professor, what I was saying.
I sure was.
Everyone knows each other's...
Yeah.
You know, somewhat maneuvers, you know?
Yeah.
Just hang on one second for me. I've got to show you this. I've got to show you this.
Chances are you're going to win and lose just as much. It's just knowing what to capitalize.
And sometimes you overplay your hand so you don't maximize the win.
Right.
How's that?
Right?
You're right. You got to play quant time. So figure that out. Right? Can't beat the house. The house always wins.
Speaking of our team, this kid who works in Petrocelli's office, he wanted me to get an autographed ball with him, right? The house always wins.
Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah,
Tino.
Yeah, I want you to take a look at this.
I gotta get a copy of this.
Yeah.
Jesus, you did it.
Take one more minute.
I gotta get that.
It's on YouTube.
Oh, it is?
This is gonna be big.
Oh my God, did you see that?
Yeah, what was the end?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, this
is
gonna
be big. What do you punch in?
This is gonna be big. I'll send you links. Okay. Don't worry, I'll send you links. So let me just take a minute more.
Yeah.
You're for Hillary. She's in a bad spot at this point. Mm-hmm. She needs some way. The Democratic Party needs a way through this. If there was some opportunity through this kind of playful approach to actually put a real issue on the table that could draw them in a way that would have humor to it and would take the edge off and would let her fold in a way that was charming. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm working on.
That's very interesting. One question I have for you.
Yeah.
What kind of a student was developed? Law school. Law school, you say?
Yeah. He's just the same way as he is now. Yeah. A little superficial.
Yeah.
Too fast to go for the gold.
Yeah.
But amazingly skilled in a ton of kind of rhetorical things, but a little more interested in the flash than he is in the substance.
Absolutely. You get him down pat.
Right.
From what I've seen.
Right. And it would help Obama, by the way, enormously if he could distance himself a little bit from Patrick, which he could do if he became the ultimate player who was making a move on something that was totally inconsistent with what DeVal had put forward, which was brick-and-mortar casinos and penalize the internet rather than invest in... I mean, the brick-and-mortars really are about making money off ignorance. And they've then become this huge lobbying interest in favor of ignorance. It's just a bad thing to bring into Massachusetts. And Massachusetts stands for education. So it's like...
You sound like my speeches, huh? You've heard my speeches,
right? I've heard some of them.
Yeah. Just like that. Yeah.
Cool.
I feel the same way you do.
Cool. All right, so I won't take any more time. I will. I certainly will. Thank you so much.
It was a real pleasure.
Been a pleasure to meet you.
It was a real pleasure.
Great. Good.
Yeah.
We'll meet again, I hope.
Yes.
I'll send you an invitation to this workshop. It's May 16th at Harvard. I certainly will. I certainly will. Thank you.
Bye, Professor.
Bye, bye.
Thank you
so much, Katie.
You're welcome. Pleasure to meet you.
We'll come to that, right? Work hard.